few months ago, one of my colleagues asked me to if I knew anybody who could help with information and sharing some information around change. And I said to him, well, I said, I'm actually the subject matter expert on change, you know, like with all humility. And what started with understanding change, you know, we created a panel and did a webcast. And then the executive sponsor for that liked it so much that he asked me to speak to his organization and talk about the phases and the stages of change. So I know all of you bring a lot to this meeting and to this group, so we want to just get a handle on where everybody is. So let's just go around the room so some of you may be new and not know one another. So tell us who you are, what you do, and your experience in managing change inside or outside an organization. I'm going to start.
Graduate degree is with OD, so part of that, my case studies were bringing about change with high school science teachers who seemed to be very resistant, and inside the church, which I think there's more politics in social than there are in the government. And I've been through four changes within the training organization work. So part of it, what I've learned is to know that I need to change, or I can't be a model. I can't talk out of those sides.
Kind of like be the change you want to see in the world. All
right, thanks. I think that's the title of the song. My name is Joan Katsarius, and I'm very happy to be here. This is the first time I've come to the ODC, and I work with Diane and Murr. I'm also a trainer, and my relationship to change is that I've lived it more than I've studied it. My degree was in instructional design, instructional technology, and I've also been a language teacher. So I've dealt with change, I guess, really from a perspective of dealing with students who were non-native English speakers, and that is certainly a very interesting way to kind of see the world from a different perspective. But I also am here to think about how we can practically tackle some of the issues that we're dealing with at MERC within our training organization. And that's, of course, within an industry that's constantly changing.
I'm Pat Abel, and I'm a member of the Reading-based chapter as well as the Lehigh Valley chapter. I'm a solo practitioner, trainer, and consultant. And what I've noticed with my clients, I work with a wide variety of industries. I've noticed what I call a paradox of change, which is that people are not resistant to change. We do not resist change. It's something else that we're resistant. And when I'm working with my clients, I'm always trying to find out what is it that you're really resisting. Is it the change itself, or is it something else? Because people inherently, we do change. And we often like changes. New baby in the family, hooray, that's a change, but we like it, you know. So I'm always trying to get to the root of what their discomfort is all about. And ultimately, I find that no matter what strategies I bring to them or processes, too often they just fall back into the, well, okay, I'm the boss of here, so it's going to be. And I don't know if that's all the boss's fault, where the remedy needs to come from there. I'm also a Quaker, and our process of change is very different than the rest of the population, from what I can see. We really get focused on process, and it's really tough when you're trying to make a short-term change, but long-term change. Most people are on board. They might not like it, but they're willing to work with it if it takes the time to do it and do the process.
Thanks, Pat.
Hi, I'm Cheryl Swingle, and I'm one of the career coaches over at Lehigh Garrison. And I had probably about 20 years of, or better, of HR experience in both technical roles, training roles, leadership roles, probably argue that I've seen an awful lot of change internally in organizations, both in terms of, I've been in a startup organization, so I've seen the evolution of it go from very small to acquiring two other organizations to being acquired by what I kind of lovingly term a behemoth company. I've gone and seen numerous amounts of other dynamics where I ended up changing myself in terms of being embedded in an organization and being external as an independent consultant. And I've also seen change where I'm working consistently with people in transition. So I'm seeing the change that's been thrust upon people. And I think that's a big issue, is where's the control point? Am I in charge of the change, or is the change being thrust upon me? And I think a lot of times people want to know, what is the impact on me? And once you can answer that question first, the rest of the change will actually come along a lot easier. But until that question's answered, it's like this big filter that they can't see through. That's a lot of the things that I've observed.
I'm Mike Hendry. I'm the HR generalist for the Philadelphia. I support the Philadelphia and Pittsburgh Metro Board of Trustees. So we have seen a lot of change. I started seeing a lot of change in my organization internally in the past 5 years. Two changes recently is the way in which we do our performance management, which has been different for people who are used to. So that's kind of been thrust upon them, and they have to get used to that. Also, I mean, we're in the midst of changing to a technology that we're going to use in about a week. And for me, because I'm out actually making a presentation, is to convey the value of the change to the employees and to the managers. There's a lot of time and effort we spent at the corporate office to do this, so that from our standpoint, from an HR standpoint, we become business partners and move to higher level. But in order to do that, we really need to sell to the rest of the organization why this is a value.
Good morning, I'm Leslie Crinton. My company is the Training Agenda, and my expertise is offering in-house workshops and doing consulting in business writing, leadership, and customer service. And my approach as far as getting people to change behaviors is to help them learn or relearn skills that will empower them to navigate situation that they're in. I happen to do a lot of work with the city of Philadelphia, where it changes election, if at all. And the people I really like working with there are the line people and the staff people, and their biggest challenge is interacting with their management. That's the way we've done it since the ICE age, and that's how we'll continue doing it. And so I think, change in my experience comes from my changing my behavior, my learning something, my being different in a situation that helps me get a different result. And I think when it comes to organizations, so much has to be that it's the management that's supporting it, because so often management says people like me who are trying to fix that. Well, it really is more about management than about on the front line, especially something like customer service, where the challenge is not the external customer, it's interacting with your internal customers, your management, the peers, the colleagues, your associates.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Mary O'Connor, and I am a career coach for the Impact Group as a consultant. I also do other projects as a consultant. I've done projects for my clients that kind of involve change management as well as performance management. I've watched people, internally, I've participated in projects where we've had to do some major changes. I recently worked in a project with the elderly. They're all ingrained in what they do and need their schedules, et cetera, and so making them change to do anything is very difficult, so I led a team through that kind of really upheaval for them. I've also been on the other side where I've had clients have their companies change and merge or be acquired with by another company. So how I approached them had to change as well, because you know the processes and the methods that they had to do their work changed. So I've seen it from a couple of different sides. I agree with some of you that talk about having to be the model for change, because that's one of the more powerful ways that you can initiate change. You can't say that I'll go ahead and do this and then you do it the old way, otherwise everybody's going to think it's the flavor of the month. So you really have to demonstrate those skills to the folks that you're dealing with.
There's a process, there's a roadmap, and for me, when I'm pitching or when I'm working with teams or any kind of change, I will say it doesn't matter to me what roadmap you use as long as you know what roadmap you're using and you follow that. And we'll also talk about roles as well and how you can bring change into an organization with various roles so that you can do it effectively, and culture too.
Good morning, I'm Jim Caruso, a senior training specialist at Covance, and my specialty would be integrating business acumen and leadership, and my experience in training and consulting on the various change models. I've always enjoyed the Lewin curve, as well as incorporating Connor and the CAT model. And also, I also believe in the integration with other disciplines such as project leadership, strategy, influence. I like just from change management from that perspective.
Hi, everybody. Nathan Eckel. I'm the, I guess most immediately, I'm the president-elect of the ASTD PHL chapter. I teach at LaSalle. I'm an instructional designer. Got a lot on the plate right now. But basically, the relationship to change management, there's a lot of changes happening in the chapter and with their SIGs and different things going on. And it's just been really fascinating to me. How to kind of steer change, how to be on top of it. And the relationship to organizational development, I've realized, in my opinion, as an instructional designer or as a trainer or anything else that you do, is if you don't understand change, if you don't understand organizational development, it's kind of like you've got handcuffs on and you can't really do your job and you can't have the impact that you thought you would have going through a master's program or a certification program as an instructional designer or a trainer, unless you understand these dynamics that they may or may not have taught you in school. So that's how I feel about it.
Exactly. Yeah. I think about the work done up front and having the consultant, internal or external, at the table will mitigate a lot of those other things that you have to go back and do rework for and kind of do damage control. So we'll talk about what can you do up front and follow a roadmap. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Frank Felsberg, and I really don't do change all that well, although you may disagree. But I'm a high S, for those of you familiar with the DISC model, and change doesn't come naturally for me. I get set in my ways, and I don't like to change those ways. But I tell my wife that, if once I develop that habit, I'm good to go. But it takes me a while to change. We've had a new puppy for about 3 months, and so there's been a lot of change in the house. That's why I haven't shaved this morning, and well, actually, it's not why I have this beard, but, I'm starting to get my mornings back. The dog is finally settling down. I've also noticed that politicians who want to get into office talk about change until they get in office, and then they stop talking about change.
George Palumbo again, and I am an independent consultant offering a pretty comprehensive range of services to companies. Most of my clients are pharmaceutical companies, big pharmaceutical companies, and that's for a good reason. I've worked more than half a lifetime in a big pharmaceutical company. And that's where I really learned a lot about change, and most of it I learned from watching change initiatives, and these were generally big company-wide, company being like 50,000 plus people, organizational changes. A lot of them failed. In fact, I would say most of them failed. I saw many of them as observers. A couple of them I were actually on the teams when I was doing the OD work there as well. I was always fascinated, and I know Pat talked a little bit about resistance, but I was always fascinated at the resistance that happens. And it's not overt resistance. It's not people saying, I don't want to do that. It's like, you know, these big change teams, suddenly their resources are pulled. Or suddenly some people are reassigned, and sometimes people are fired. You know, high up executives on these change teams. And I like to think of it as in a positive light, like when you're getting resistance, then you're affecting change. It's happening. Because if a lot of these change results are a name only, and if you're not getting resistance, then nobody's thinking anything's going to happen. But that's just one of the things that I've always been fascinated about by change.
And we are going to talk about an element of resistance as well, because that, you know, it's going to be natural, you know, and wherever, recognizing where people are in any stage of the change process helps you understand what skill you need to use to address it and keep people moving through the process. So, you know, my background in education and transferring learning to the workplace also guides this presentation and other things that I do. So we will have a bit of interactivity, you'll have a bit of application, we'll have a bit of theory. I'm going to mush this all together so that you can really get something concrete out of this and apply it to your own life. So first part of that is everybody's going to stand up. And I'm going to ask you some questions. If you can answer yes to the question, sit down. All right. Who here has added to or released a member of the family in the last 5 years? So that could be sending somebody off to college, moving somebody out, getting a new puppy. If you have, sit down. Okay. Released a few. All right. Who's moved to a different home in the last 3 years? Sit down. No, you don't have to stand up. Once you sit down, stay. Sit. Give me your phone. Who's reported to a new leader, director, sponsor in the last 2 years? Okay. All right, well, should I ask the last question? All right, who's changed roles? All right, who's experienced an organizational realignment? So, all right, everyone in the last 5 years has experienced some element of change, so you really are the experts on change yourself. Now, what we're going to do is tease out what happened, what you went through in the experience, and in the various experiences you have, because we keep going through this. It's kind of like life has lessons, and you get these lessons over and over again until you get the lesson. So, organizational change, it can be challenging. There's a book called Change or Die. If we don't change, we're just going to shrivel up, because what got us to a point will not get us forward. And your own business, if you're an external, you got to the point of being an external by activities that you did. But if you want to continue working to be a consultant, whether internal or external, you're going to need to step back and say, what is the need for my client group? And how do I respond to those needs? So if you're internal, you can say, here's an organizational structure that got us to a certain point, but what got us here isn't going to get us there to the next point in our life cycle, the business life cycle. It also gets a lot of reactions to change. You know, and you can think about the changes that you have in your head when I asked you the questions, and all of those reactions are normal. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to walk through the possible reactions. And it requires a sense of commitment so that you can be successful. And that's different than compliance. It's like you have people's head versus you have people's heart. And you've got their backs, too. So really, to internalize, to sustain change, requires commitment so that we're not just going through the motions. It's kind of like the difference between the ham and eggs, where the pig is committed, but the chicken, you know, is involved in the change. And on the part of leaders and the roles of people who are responsible for change requires effective leadership, individual contributors as leaders, as well as the sponsors of the change. Make sense? Okay. change, we're done. So what we're going to do is we're going to talk about the stages and the phases of change, because we all go through various stages and phases, and there's a situational aspect to the change, but also the psychological aspect that's going to last a little bit longer. And we'll look at some strategies, management strategies, leadership strategies, so that you can effectively navigate those changes. So I have, in my life cycle, my experience, learned about change doing external work as a in transition, people in transition. So people were laid off, their jobs were eliminated, 26 different ways to say that you no longer have a job. And I would then pick up the people and work with them so that they could go out and search, step back and redo their resumes, do interviewing skills with them, etc. And the first thing that would happen is you think about somebody coming to me after being told that their positions were eliminated, and it's like their eyes are like this, and so they go through these stages. So we need to work through where they are emotionally before we do the rational work of let's go and plan what your search is going to look like. So that's where I first learned about it. I also had the pleasure of meeting Dr. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross and talking about the stages too. So I'm going to talk a little bit about that as well. But the first thing that you want to see is a model for change. And what I said earlier, it doesn't matter what model you use as long as you have a model in your head. And the work that goes into this presentation is based on Cotter. I think you mentioned John Cotter. So, and John Cotter actually has a cycle of change with 8 steps, but I'm only addressing 6 of them because that's something that just we adapted it, you know, adapted the model for change. I'm also going to use the work of Bridges, and Mary has the latest book, Managing Transitions, which I'm just going to advertise here. That is going to talk about the psychological phases of change. So that's what this piece is based on. But the first thing, let me see if I... All right, the model that we're looking at, and prior to implementing a change, you want to step back and look at it and make a case for change. So what is the business case for change? What is your reason for it? And what got us to a point, and where do we want to go forward? So we think about what is the business reason for this, to make some change. And then ensure that you've got the stakeholders there, everybody who's going to be touched by the change, and bring them in and talk about it. Talk about the vision, talk about where you are, where you need to be, the business reason for that, and start kind of like, you know, shoring up the people and socializing it before announcing to the organization or announcing to the stakeholders and the targets really what your change is going to be. And in the change vernacular, you have several roles. One is the sponsor. That's the individual who has the power of the purse. That's the individual who has the power of consequences. That's the individual who is going to say change or die, in so many words. But that individual will be the one who articulates, this is what I expect you to do. And we have sponsors who may announce the change, and then the sustaining sponsors who really are the ones who work with the next group of people, and they are the agents. They're the ones who implement the change, and they're not the ones who have the power of the consequences, but they are the people who may have the expertise, they would have the process, and they would have the skill to deal with some of the issues that would occur around the change. So they're actually in there with the folks. And then finally, we have the targets of the change, and these are the people who you expect to change. So we've got the sponsor, the target, and the agents, and all of the people who might be affected by the change. So your family, in the case of a new puppy, everybody's affected by the change. What's going to happen? What does this entail? And do we bring in somebody to walk the dog when we're at work, et cetera? Think about an organization. Mary was talking about working with senior citizens then, too. And engage people. One of the things that I've done is I've actually been working in a change initiative saying, who's affected by this? And bring them in to talk about what are the barriers. What can happen as a result of this, and how will people best respond to it, so that when we implement the change, we do the execution, we can say this initiative was developed based upon input from your, you know, a slice of your organization, from the people who were the targets. So they're helping us do this rather than have something done to people. We also look at how do we communicate the vision, and communication as frequently as possible so that people stay up to speed. And then taking away any barriers. What are those things that can stand in the way of change? They could be resources. Like you're talking about implementing a new system, but if we don't have equipment that operates at the speed that you need, then people are going to just get frustrated, right? Crazy. And that's like teaching that pig to say, you know, it's kind of frustrates the farmer, it makes the pig angry. So you look at what are those barriers that are going to get in the way so that when people learn something or they're expected to do something new, that those barriers are removed. And then measure, set some measures of success and acknowledge those measures along the way. It's kind of like seeing the light at the end of the tunnel, but knowing where you are and getting to that point so that you can celebrate those little successes and kind of celebrate them like crazy. And then reinforce the change. So when you see the behaviors that you want, when you see people embracing and internalizing the change, you reinforce it. In the best of all possible worlds, this is what happens. And this is what happens before you actually do anything. And many of you have worked in situations where you are kind of called in on like step four and you have to go back. So just recognize and try to build those relationships with your client groups so that you can go up and you're at the table and talk about these elements. Questions about the stages here, the model? Yes.
Yeah, if we could just talk about the different people again, just to make sure I wrote them down right. We have stakeholders, we have sponsors, we have sustaining sponsors, agents, targets, and then the people. Did I get that right?
The targets are the people.
Targets are the people.
To, you know, okay. Who are the recipients of the change and the ones who need to execute the change.
Okay.
The sponsor is the individual has the power of the purse, initiate it. They're the ones who have the power of the consequences as well. Okay?
Okay.
All right. So, all right, next thing. All right. In a simple world, this is what happens. You're in the current state, and you're going to go there to another state. Now, I have an accountant who likens this to the stock market, and he says that your investments do not follow a straight line. You don't go from the current state to the future state in a straight line. But instead, what happens is we kind of go up and down. You know, there are highs, there are lows to get to where we need to be. That's the reality of change. Some people embrace it, some people accept it. We go through situations, we have business needs, we have elements beyond our control, and we also have things in our control. So the reality says that change is going to be cyclical. And what also we're looking at is that it's not the change itself. The change itself is a situation. And one of the times when I was talking about change, we were right in the throes of an election, and we were bringing a new president on board. In 4 hours, they moved the old president and his belongings out of the White House and moved the new president in his family and his belongings into the White House. And you could see, if you watched the inauguration, they were painting, et cetera, et cetera. So the change itself is the situation. The tough part is the emotional aspect that we go through, the psychological aspect that we go through. So you can have a change in a nanosecond, but then it's that assimilation of the change that we need to work with. And that's really what we're going to focus on today, to help you assimilate, understand what's going on, and have some strategies for addressing the change. So think about it, change that you are supporting, something that you're going through. And all right, I need you to break up with a partner. And we're going to have a threesome somewhere. So grab somebody, have meaningful eye contact with somebody, and describe in headlines, you know, a change to, okay? So give us, is this a threesome over here? Okay, Frank and George, you two work together.
I'm
How are you doing, Jim? Good.
Nice to meet you.
Well, just establish meaningful eye contact with somebody, and that will be your partner for your assignment for the interactive, one of the interactive pieces of this. And then I'm going to walk you through something. So, you want to partner. Okay, and you've got a change in your head, right? Okay, so think about a change that you have. Now, question, and this is by your applause, right? Okay, by your applause. Okay, who was caught off guard with that change?
Applause.
Okay, caught off guard, you had a change. Who's caught off guard?
I'm sorry, applause. Caught off guard in the change situation?
Right. Surprised me. Oh, I didn't know that was happening. All right, if you are caught off guard, then just applaud. This is my way of getting applause from the group. Okay. All right, who got angry about the change? Okay, by your applause, okay? All right, who blames somebody else? It's your fault that we're changing, all right?
No anger.
Okay. No anger that we're owning up to. Who said, all right, let's just get on with it? So you say, all right, so we all had different reactions to it. Let's look at the various kinds of reactions in the model. And I follow Sarah. If you remember the word Sarah, then you'll understand the stages of change that we go through. And these stages are based on the work of Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, who did so much work with death and dying and gave us the understanding of what people experience in the stages of death and dying. I was just so fortunate several years ago, before she passed away, to meet her and to sit down and talk with her. I was just like one-on-one. It was the two of us, and I was, wow, this is too cool. And she lived in Phoenix, and I was on vacation with my family in Phoenix, and I had read a book that she wrote, and in the jacket it said that she lived in Phoenix, and I thought, oh, wouldn't that be great? I'll love to meet Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. And I'm like, yeah, you know, like, fat chance I'm going to meet Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. But when we got to Phoenix, I looked her up in the phone book. She was listed. And then, before we left, you know, left to go home, I thought, well, you know, she's up there. You know, I don't know when I'm going to be back in Phoenix again. So I called her. She answered the phone. Like, she was expecting my phone call. And I said, Dr. Ross, I'm here on vacation with my family, and I'd like to meet with you. And she said, 11 o'clock. And I was like, oh, yes. So I threw the kids in the pool real fast, you know, put them out, and then met with her. And I said, I'm so excited. I said, I have used your work in my work. And she said, you know, that wasn't originally about death and dying. Really? And she said, a woman came to her whose baby was born blind. And she said to her, one day this will be a blessing. You will learn from this. And years later, the little girl grew up to be a concert pianist, came back to Dr. Ross and said, it was indeed a blessing. And then Dr. Ross said, I was this close to saying, I told you so. So she said, but it's about positive change and about negative change. We go through all these stages. Any of you ever, like, scratch and win the lottery? And if you win the lottery, but the first thing is you look at it and you say, wow, is that really my number? Did I really get $5? How many of you have ever had a flat tire? Okay, first thought in your head. You go through, you're going to go through these stages. So it can be a positive situation or a negative situation, something that could impact you, but you take it, we're going to go through these stages. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to walk you through the stages, and if you just remember Sarah, you'll understand all of the stages that we go through, because they're important. All right, first thing is the shock, surprise. Oh my God, I can't believe this is happening. What? I have 6 out of 7 numbers? Whoa, that's how many hundreds of thousands of dollars? And then, a flat tire, darn. And I was like, what? I can't believe this is really happening. So So you have the surprise, the shock. Then there's a little bit of anger. And it could be even if you bought a lottery ticket, you say, I should not have, like, chipped in with 35 other people. If I got this all myself, then I would have, you know, would have to split it so many ways. The anger is like, gee, I'm wearing a suit. Now I need to be somewhere. So even if it lasts for a nanosecond, there's some experience of anger. How many of you know someone who's been divorced? And then how many of you know people who are 10 years later, they're still angry? Kind of stuck. And they may be stuck in that phase. And that's unhealthy. So there's some experience of anger. I actually worked with some folks who said if you put a D in front of that and you get stuck in the anger, then it turns into danger. Then you've got some rejection, some little bit of bargaining or blaming. You blame somebody else. You're responsible for this change. Then you'll also say, if only I did this and that would have happened. If only I parked someplace else, I wouldn't have this flat tire. Oh my gosh, if only I had checked when the light went on, that little symbol in my car that said check tire pressure, if only I'd done it. So you have a little bit of bargaining, a little bit of blaming, a little bit of negotiating in your head. So we go through that negotiation and the rejection process. And then you get to the point of saying, it is what it is. Now, if you have a flat tire, there is no amount of wishing and hoping that will reinflate that tire. So this is the point where you say it is what it is. And the last stage is really hope, but not in the sense of false hope. It's really saying, now what am I going to do about it? What is my willingness to move on and move out of that? If it is what it is, do I call AAA? I know people who went through reorganizations where people were moving all around them, and they didn't pack a thing. There was still coffee cup with warm coffee on their desk until they said, you know, it is what it is, and we are moving, so we're going to just take you physically and get you out of here. That's the willingness to move on. And recognizing where an individual is and where you are helps you understand what skill you need to use. If the emotions are up, the ability to be rational is low. Higher emotion at which of those stages do you think? There's anger, the shock, can't believe it. And knowing where people are helps you understand that what skills that you need to use to bring the emotional level down so that you can be rational. Now, I will also tell you that these stages are normal, and we can move in and out of them. We can go up, we can come back down until we get that willingness to move on. So later, when you go home, when you see your family, when you see your friends, and you know that you've gone through these stages, you can also tell them that you're normal. Okay. Yes, Pat.
How does your graphic tie into Sarah?
Oh, well, this is kind of like a dance. If you look at it closely, people are like going through a dance, and it's a dance of change, which is also a reference book. So we go through that, you do a two-step, you go back a little bit, and that's really the up and down movement of going through shock, anger, rejection, up, back up, a little more bargaining, back down again to the acceptance and that willingness to move on. Very good question. Very sharp of you. Okay. So the changes are so normal, and they are dynamic, so we move in and out of the stages. And, you know, the individual who said, all right, let's just go on and get on with it, they can go through them in nanoseconds. They can go through them in a short period of time. But the willingness to go has to come through the change, comes from within. So we're not going to change unless it comes from within, no matter how much you push someone to do it. Make sense? Yes? Okay, good.
That reminds me of my favorite joke. You probably all heard. How many psychologists does it take to change a light bulb?
I have to want to?
One, but the light bulb has to want to change.
Thank you for that audience participation. Now, you've got your partner. Describe in a headline the change that you're working on, that you're leading, that you may be sponsoring. And describe that in a headline to your partner.
So we're kind of two.
Oh, wow.
Is that okay? Or do you think Is it going to be like a full-time job, or is it going to be
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. This has been a good example of Georgia State and the changes in leadership and something we're trying to implement for all the sick leaders. Georgia's one of the more cooperative ones,
right.
Obviously. He's a great guy. That all of our cities are great.
Right.
But it's something that we're getting back together as a board, though. Everybody on the board has stepped up. And now we're trying to streamline things. Reporting, whatever it might be, using unified Gmail account, all these different things. It's, very clever.
The question is, which one is the accessible to stuff?
It's all members only. I'm going to keep this one also.
Right.
Oh, really? Did you? All right, come on back.
Right.
You've all described it in
so
a headline, your change.
It is on the website.
Come on,
website.
Back there, Nathan. Now, you described your change. Describe your change in the headline or the New York Times version. All right, so now you have this change. Keep this change in your head because that's the situation. That is the incident. That is the moment. Now, let us look at the phases of change. And this is based on the work of William Bridges. So kind of like the DNA of change. So we've got the endings, we have the neutral zone, and we have the beginnings. And I kind of equate this to swinging on a trapeze, where you kind of, you're on one end of the trapeze, you're in this midair, and then you grab onto the other end of the trapeze. And sometimes the swing from the other side, the new swing, doesn't quite get to you, so you may go back to the old stage. And we'll also look at what are some of the psychological factors or the emotional factors that go through. So we're going to talk about the endings, and you'll reflect on your situation, what the endings are, the elements there, and some strategies. We'll talk about what happens at the neutral zone, and then we'll also talk about what happens in the beginnings, the new beginnings phase. So in the endings, there's this period of just letting go, of celebrating the past, of honoring the past. And that's critically important because what got you to a certain point needs to get you to the next point. So it was kind of like a stepping stone along the way, and we honor where we were. So there needs to be some kind of celebration, lessons learned, reflection, and not a point of saying that was wrong and going forward is right, but saying this is where we were, now to move forward, to grow, and not to shrivel up, we need to move on to the next phase of our organization, of our initiative, etc. So you're going to experience a few things here. Some surprise, you'll see some anger, you'll see some fear of the unknown. Some people will equate this to the freezing, unfreezing aspect too, based upon the work of Lewin. So kind of like have that state and you let go of it, and then you need to move forward. With your partners, think about some of the reactions that you might encounter in the ending phase. And remember I talked about the fear, the shock, the anger, that kind of discomfort with not knowing the unknown. So with your partner, what you want to do now is think about some of those reactions that the people you're working with in this change might encounter, and some ideas for how you might address them. And take a couple minutes to do that.
I guess with this idea of various groups, we have all kinds of reactions. For example, being the strongest thing we've been doing this for 4 years, we have I've been fairly proactive about just explaining the overall needs and things that we win. Hey, we want to establish credibility. We want to use the strength of the chapter and part of the group, and vice versa. We want to make sure that all the things are taken properly. For example, we didn't have one place where there's a little bit more leeway. So I just kind of focus on positive and the reasons why we come together. And I also call it for the last few years. And I pretty much ended it with that because it was kind of a personal. Not a personal condition, but I'm still with President Black. I can walk beyond knowing that all these happens when things are challenging. I'm sitting here, whatever they want to do, which is great. I just want to make sure that everybody's it's interesting because, like I said, you can't do much in this field until you get these changes or
I'm curious, my experience, which is the one which we're trying to get.
All right, folks, come on back now. Let's talk about some of the reactions.
I was talking to Frank.
Come on back. Come on back. What kind of reactions might you encounter? Did you encounter with this change? What reactions did you talk about?
Uncertainty.
And say more about that.
Well, you know, someone's vision of change may be completely different from the reality.
So what they think is going to happen may be different than what actually is going to happen. And it's kind of like putting in your head, you know, think about a tree, and you may think of a pine tree, and somebody else may think of an oak tree. Okay. And then how might you address that, Frank?
With a lot of perseverance and patience and that's how I would approach it. I mean, that, especially when you don't have much control over the situation, you have to be faithful that it's going to work out one way or another, and that you can't give up. I think maybe sometimes people have a tendency to throw in the towel and say this is ridiculous, but there's people that do that. I think they get, they're dissatisfied in the end, when the people that apply themselves and look for, you know, try to climb every mountain, if you will, they're the ones that benefit.
Yeah. And remember what I said earlier, people go through the stages in their own time. Some people, you know, yep, all right, let's get started, let's go on with it. Other people need time to assimilate it. In, you know, in Myers-Briggs terminology, if you have a judger and a perceiver, and you want to implement change with a judger, you have to give them time to just, like, process it, to, you know, accept it, to get used to it, where the perceiver may say, well, I'm just going to go forward, that's it. Even something simple like, well, let's go out to lunch, but we're going to go someplace else. That's kind of like you drive-by change, you know, like, we're going to go out to lunch, different place, and then you leave, give them time to absorb it, and then go back, you know, while they have it in. But recognize, too, that people are going to have different reactions and different periods of time to get through it to assimilate the change. What other reactions did you talk about that you might encounter?
Yes. I think it was interesting to hear just elements of either loss of grounding or even elements of grief. Just recognizing you tend to have a little bit of a romanticized view of what was. Mm-hmm. No matter what the positives the change may bring.
Mm-hmm.
There's that rose-colored rearview mirror, and there's times where you have to just focus, I think, on how you've been successful in creating positives in the past as strategies in order to be able to move forward successfully through that kind of challenging whitewater, and then also the excitement of the positive that the change will bring itself, the benefits of it will help you propel. But to not acknowledge that there is a piece of grief in it, I think, is not fair to yourself.
Mm-hmm. And if you're working with leaders in an organization who are supposed to be sponsoring the change, then it's got to be okay for the leader to say, here's what we need to do. I know this is best for the business, and I'm having a hard time myself. I'm working through this myself. And so many times I will give leaders permission to have their own grieving. So, and communicate that, because you're normal too. So communicate that I'm having a hard time myself, I'm going through these stages, and I know this is best for the business to move forward. And then what got us here, recognize the success and all the hard work, and that the other, the people who need to implement the change, the targets, will need to use the same skills and look forward to the future state. So let's look at some strategies now for working in this endings phase. A couple things. Now, remember the characteristics are in that, the denial, the anger, things that you all talked about, the grief, people not knowing, and they may just want to jump ship, you know, fight or flight tendencies. A couple strategies to work through managing the ending stage Communicate and over-communicate. Your cycle of communication needs to be closer. What happens when you don't communicate the elements of the change and share information with people? Be transparent.
They make assumptions, or they're fearful,
right.
Or...
Sure, we'll fill in the blanks.
And they're usually wrong.
Right.
And that makes it worse, because now they're going down a path that you now have to say, wait, that's not what we meant.
Exactly. They'll fill the blanks, they can be wrong about it, but their thought process creates this whole scenario and a story. So share up-to-the-moment information. What I know, you know. And I advocate actually, disclosure and being transparent. Saying there's some things, some elements of this that we may be working out, and yet we need to over-communicate. So that cycle of communication needs to be as frequent as possible. And remember, people have different learning styles. So you need to communicate different ways. I also tell people that you have to communicate the same thing 7 times because, I have been in situations where I heard the message and then the team will say a month later, I never heard somebody say that. Where did that come from? So it's like, so we communicate. And also, what's your understanding of what I just said? What does that mean to you? So communication is going to be on several different levels. You've got the content, you check in for reaction questions, more content, check in, so that when I end up communicating the message, you and I are in the same place instead of somebody going back thinking, oh, they're announcing a change, we're moving to another building, or we're shutting down this site, etc. Now they're stuck there with what does that mean to me? What does that mean to daycare? How am I going to get there? Gee, I'm going to have to pay taxes now, that I didn't have to pay before, etc. And you're ending the story with, and it's going to be effective July 1st, and they're just not there. So over-communicate, and communicate several different ways, in writing, in groups, one-on-one, etc., and check in periodically for questions. You also want to acknowledge the emotions, theirs and yours. The leaders and the team's emotion, the targets of the change, where are they? And wherever they are, it's okay. Remember, those stages are normal. And look for different viewpoints. So that's where you check in periodically as you're communicating the change and say, what questions do you have? What perspective? What impact does this have on you? And then honor that past, a celebration. You can have a, burn the old, annual report party, or just have cupcakes, or just have a closure, lessons learned. But honor, all the work that you did brought us to where we are now. So celebrate and honor that past. And then look at readiness. One of the things that we did many years ago, we were implementing culture change and quality management in the organization, and some people came to the workshop and they were resistant. Well, that got in the way of being receptive to learning. So what we did was we put in a process to meet with people ahead of time, with the leader and the team, to say, here's what's expected, this is what's going to happen, this is what's going to happen after the fact, and here's during the workshop. And we're looking for openness, receptivity to it, so that when people walk into a workshop, they're already in a place where they can be that container to receive it. And then acknowledge the culture, the way we do things around here. And the culture's got us to a certain point. The way we do things here, the rules that are written and unwritten, need to be revisited on a regular basis. And you look at the 4 keys, and this is around the 4 is. You start the chartering process. That would be our purpose. What's our rationale? Our picture, the vision of the future, the planning part. How are we going to do this? And our roles. That's our parts. So what's everyone's role, respective role, in implementing the change? 4 keys. And you start that. Purpose, plan, the picture, and the parts. Questions about the ending space. Honor the past, respect the past, celebrate the past, and start your chartering.
Just a comment and a kind of a question to, I like the chartering.
Mm-hmm.
Within our training organization, we actually have a subgroup of change ambassadors.
Mm-hmm.
I'm amongst that group,
mm-hmm.
and some of us have varying levels of experience with change. I think most of us are kind of finding our way with the leadership of someone from HR. He's doing a pretty good job, but we're kind of at the visioning stage. We've gathered some data from the other trainers earlier in the year, and now we're kind of questioning how to best roll it out. Do we bring folks together
and do focus groups to see if we've understood what we've heard. So we're probably going to do a combination of things, but I don't know if you have any experience to share there with kind of the best way to make the vision not sound like it's another, you know, task or order, but something collaborative.
Like this is the program of the month, and this is what we're going to do now.
Well, and we don't want to make it seem too forced.
Exactly. Right. So bringing a slice of the organization in, people who are targets of the change, saying here's what we want to do, here's the business purpose for doing it. What do you foresee as the best way to implement this and get the input so that when you actually do implement the change, you can say, we're doing this based upon suggestions that we received from a slice of the organization, your counterparts. And use that. And even if you can have, for implementing a change, I know I was doing a leadership program, and I asked the sponsors to send me the friendliest people first. So, you know, so they would participate in the leadership development program and then went back out into the field and told their friends, their colleagues who had to go through it, that it was a good thing. They got a lot out of it. And this soft, mushy stuff, the soft skills that we were doing, was really going to be helpful to make them more effective leaders. So they were my ambassadors. And I said to them, I need you. You know, I need you to give this the press that it deserves and to say, this is how I'm going to use it, and this is what I learned. And I also need you to cooperate with Ginger. So it's like, you know, they told their friends because I was not a known quantity to them until many of them met me. But I also did a needs assessment ahead of time and had a slice of the targets with me to do it, to say, what do we really need to focus on and at what level is my going in point? So do I start at the basic level because they know nothing, or do I go in with capitalizing what they already know and building on it and taking their strengths and making them stronger?
That's very helpful. Thank you.
Call me, we can chat more. All right, any other thoughts, questions, reactions? No? All right, so you finish the ending stage. You've got that addressed and some strategies for addressing the endings. Now let's look at that neutral zone where you're not on one trapeze and you're not on the other trapeze and you're kind of swinging in midair. So this is in the neutral zone, is that in-between time where you kind of let go, where you have that ice cube that's melting and it hasn't really changed its state yet. Little bit of ambiguity where we're not quite sure because we haven't seen the results, the business results of the change that we're implementing. So there is some kind of like scooching in an adjustment period. Now, how many of you have teenagers? There is some kind of a shoe that these kids like that it's a flip-flop. You put your foot in, and it's leather, and it forms to the person's foot, called rocks or something. I don't know what it is, but it's leather. And my daughter has a pair that she's had for 4 years now. So they don't break. They shape to the foot, and everybody wears them. Which, when you go to a party and everybody takes their shoes off and you go to put your shoes back on, you know you've got the right ones because they mold to your feet. So you've got this adjustment period, just like with those, you know, leather flip-flops. You also have the adjustment period in the workplace and in your own situation, whether it is moving to a new house and finding, you know, what the creeps are, what the neighborhood's like, using a GPS to get around, you don't know where things are. So there's this kind of adjustment period. So in your situation, with your partner, couple questions here. What can you do in that adjustment period to maintain productivity? Because if you're in a work environment, if you're functioning, you can't just kind of like stop, let go, and you know, things don't happen. That's like stopping breathing. So what can you do with your initiative so that you keep being productive? I understand this may be difficult. I understand you need to get used to it. And we still need to deliver to our client, to the customer. So talk with your partners about some strategies for maintaining productivity and solidifying the trust.
Okay. Yeah. I just thought of a really good scenario. Great analogy to what we just talked about. We did the research of 5 years ago, and we're moving from the university to online format. Not entirely, of course, but I mean, with what I was given all kinds of crazy little issues with that. Ideally, I would have done what she was saying if I had been the person who designed it. And those people who designed it had not had the organization work things, they probably would have designed it this time. But all the, put it in there. In any case, Jim, when I get people, of course, I try to instead of cancel them out, kill all of them, even though it seems offside, enough of that to get those positive people together. I just lean heavy on the positive people as excuse. The propaganda a little bit more positive, or else you just it becomes disproportionate. And then the naysayers, or the people that are dealing with it, just put a damper on the whole thing. And that doesn't help anybody. Interesting quote that I heard from the leadership group, you might have heard of John Maxwell or not. But he says the only difference between manipulation and leadership is your intentions.
Yes.
And I was like, wow, it's done. That was a classic situation. One of the few industries or jobs on the street, That's what I realized is the communication. I've got normally, super great about it, but I've gotten better at it because I know that's part of the job. If you don't do that, you can be sure these questions as people freak out because they don't trust me. Because why should they? You can have talked to them. Or if you talk to them, you can have a school stuff or whatever it is that you're tasked with. So I'm trying to change that a little bit.
Checking in with people, being proactive, how are things going? Remember if things are tough, there's conflict or whatever, or ambiguity, remember our goal, where we're going, where we've been, a worse state to a better state, and just checking in with people.
Okay. So checking, how are you doing? Kind of get a pulse of where's the emotional level right now, and have they kind of balanced out their emotion, or do they need something, do they need to talk? What questions do you have? What do you need from me to be effective?
I don't know. I thought it might want to go off first.
Oh, okay.
But I'm just making stuff up.
Okay.
Let me try something. One more.
Any other thoughts? Maintaining productivity, teamwork, and trust?
Yes. I would always reference shared goals and try to change into the what's in it for them kind of mode whenever possible. Mm-hmm. And, you know, personal thing that I've tried to remember is, you know, get off of the task-focused stuff and try to talk about them, get to know them a little bit if you have the time to afford that.
We were actually just talking about that over here. So people need to do the thing, but they also need to get to know one another and relate on a more personal level.
Yeah.
So what brings, you know, what do you bring to the party? And when I kick off a team, I actually, we'll talk about our charter, but I also ask the team members, what is it that you want to get out of this? And then, perfect, thank you. I don't know what you did, George, but
well,
it was magic.
I'm a mechanic. I can.
So, but we talk about what is it that you want to get out of this so that as a leader, what I can do is make sure that that happens. And I've had people say, I really want some visibility with senior leadership. So it's like, okay, well, let's make sure that happens. So it says, I don't want visibility with senior leadership. And that would be it would be more punishing for them. I want to learn about another part of the business. So we're another part of the organization. So we try to engineer that so that it's a win-win for everyone. And they get, you know, they get something a little bit out of it. Yes?
I was just going to say, sometimes you have a dissenter who's got this laundry list of all the problems and all the things that are horrible and wrong and, and you know, and this and this and this is horrible. And, you know, the comment that we had was, you know, I hear that you seem to have been more perhaps negatively impacted by this change. And I recognize that there's an awful lot of things that might need to be addressed, but if there was just one thing that you could tell me is the most important thing that we ought to go back and take a look at and see if we can get you, you know, do a little bit more research on and come back and respond to, what would that be? Just to get them focusing in on, instead of this shotgun approach, get a little bit of a CRISPR laser focus on problem solving instead of writing.
And by saying, what is that one thing and what do you recommend we do about that?
Yep.
And
bring them into the process.
As your agents have changed, you need to make sure that the sponsor is there and takes the responsibility for the change and for addressing it and also for reinforcing expectations. And you can coach the sponsor to say, you know, I can't give you that right now. Is there anything else that you want? So, you know, up until now, this is how we operated. Going forward, to be successful in our business, this is what we need to do. And want you to work with us and to be a member of this team, but you may decide that given the new situation, this may not be where you want to be. So you make the decision, and you're really empowering, or the leader's empowering, you know, the targets to accept the change and embrace it. But you can say, I can't, you know, what else is it that you want? And I can do that, or I can't do that. Is there anything else? And then you all need to decide if this is where you want to be, given what our organization needs to look like. So it's not like you have to do this. It's kind of like you don't like it, then while was hiring? You know, we just don't want to say that because there's a door. And then you're really having a parent-child conversation with someone. But if you say in an adult-adult way, here's what we need to do, and are you on board? I've actually coached leaders to recontract and with their people, and this is a great time to do that in the neutral stage, to say, here's where we are you in? Do you kind of like renew that contract? And if you're in the football season, you know, they're going to be recontracting, you know, we renewed that contract. And the performance assessment process is a way to re-recruit the people who work with you. So think about this as a way to re-recruit, to recontract. Are you in? And you need to decide if this is where you want to be, given the expectations of our organization. You decide. Yes, Pat?
I like Cheryl's focusing comment. And I've used something like that in the past. I think it can be really effective. And I'm also thinking at the same time as one project I'm about to start, kind of think of some stuff, some stumbling blocks I might have encountered. And one of the things I'm afraid of is that the group I'm working with, which is frontline supervisors, I'm afraid they're going to come back. If I ask them, you know, think of one thing that you could be doing to help this, or one thing I could be doing to help this, they might come back with something like, well, one thing you could do to help us is get upper management to change. Or one thing I could do is figure out how to get upper management to change. Mm-hmm. And I'm concerned I might get that kind of response from some of the people. Would it be effective? I don't know if anybody's tried this, but what if I, on the flip chart, divided the different groups, executive, upper manager, frontline supervisor, frontline employee, and then ask them, given these four groups, what do you think each group, including, and you're one of the groups, what should each group be working on? Would that be effective, or could that open up a can of worms that I don't want to see?
What do you all think? Would that be something that would work?
It might be a can of worms.
Okay.
I've done things like, you know, the circle of influence. You know, what can you change and what can you not change, and you know, what's easier to change.
I don't want to discount the thought that maybe the executive level should change something. That's a fair comment. But I want to bring focus back to what are they going to be working on. So.
And you know, and it's also a place where you can have a parking lot and say, what are the things that may not be for the agenda right now? Let's put it up in the parking lot and I can share this. I also have had times where I've needed to bring in the sponsor to reinforce the expectations. I had a situation where we were doing a readiness assessment for training, with a team, and I couldn't tell the difference between the sponsor and the targets. Everybody was being resistant. And I asked the sponsor to step out in the hall with me, and I said, I just need to kind of make sure that we're clear on the roles. Like, my role is to implement the change. Your role is to support and sponsor the change. So it's kind of like me agent, you sponsor. And I should not have been in a position to articulate the expectations. It was his role to do that. And he thought for a second. He said, just give me a minute. He went back in, and I don't know what he did or said to the group, but he was right there in the group being the voice of the business. Another thing that I've done, too, is where I've had a group of people together, and Pat, with your frontline supervisors, this may also work, or it may even work with other levels of the organization, but I was saying, you know, you were hired in this position because someone thought that you would be capable and had the skills to run this business. So I believe that you are capable of this, and in a way empowering and reminding people of their role. So my role is that of agent and consultant. Your role is that of the implementing the change. And I believe you were hired in this role because someone thought you were capable of doing that. I think as a reminder, it's like, yeah, that's your job. And I've had that with people who were like, you know, who had union employees reporting to them, and, you know, we can do this, we can't do that, et cetera, et cetera. And I said, you know, you were hired to lead a group of union employees because you have the competencies to do it. Otherwise, you wouldn't be in this role. Okay? Yes.
The only comment that I wanted to make, too, is that sometimes, usually, because the senior leadership has created the change and created the vision, they're ahead of the people, and they forget they're ahead. Yes. So they think when they're done writing the plan and writing the vision that it's done, and that's really the beginning. And part of your role and the difficulty is going to be to remind them that they have to step back in and do the support and tell them where the rest of the company is, and the rest of the company then has to catch up, and it takes a while, so you have to remember. And the other comment I had is that in this period, it's also good to celebrate the small wins. They don't have to be the ending, but to celebrate just where you are. What little piece did we do? And I know in one of my books I was reading where there was a larger scale change that a plant operation had to do. And so they decided what they do is they paint a wall. And that when one of the teams achieved something, they would go up and write on the wall what they did. They painted it on. Mm-hmm. And every time that somebody went to the wall and painted, everybody would look, what did that team do?
And is that allowed them way to capture that?
To celebrate, you know, that achievement. And then, you know, then leadership could see it too and feedback that accolade.
And it's a way to reinforce it. Yes?
I just want to reinforce the parking lot. I did a lot of customer service training last summer with licenses and inspection and revenue at the city, which is a real tough union environment. And we really reaffirmed that all the parking lot notices were anonymous. We ended ended up with 50 pages of feedback from management, and it was really around repetitive issues.
And
it got listened.
Yeah. So the important thing, too, is that when you have the parking lot, somebody needs to circle back with the group to say, this is what we're doing, here's what we can do, here's what we can't do,
exactly.
And this is the reason why.
Because
so you can't just let
it
go into it, you know, buried in a hole somewhere.
Right, it wasn't always germane to the activities, but it was preventing them from doing their jobs.
Okay, a couple strategies now for addressing the neutral zone. So reinforce the desired behavior. Reinforce it like crazy. Incremental steps. Celebrate those little successes along the way. Get the employees engaged. Ensure that in this whole process, people are involved and engaged, so that they become the voice of the business and start, articulating the changes. Watch for and address resistance, and we'll talk about the subtle cues and clues that you see with resistance. And then reinforce the fact that you need to be productive. Here's where we are, here's where we're going, and I still expect that we need to continue to work and be productive and achieve our deliverables for the customer. Keep the line of communication open. The biggest advice that I've heard over and over again is communicate, 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 and it really does work. So those exemplars who have been successful with change really are around communicating every step along the way and having consistent messages too. And then look at the role assimilation. So that would be the roles of the new people if you're doing a restructuring or reorganization. And you can also do a new leader assimilation if you're changing a team, too. And then look at how are we doing. Reinforce the progress along the way. So what are our success measures? And how do we reinforce them? Okay? Then the lobster, too. I'll tell you the lobster story here. I was working with a client who was going through some change, and I said, would you like lobster? And he said, yes. And I said, lobsters aren't born 2 pounds. And that was nothing new to him. And I said, but how do you think lobsters get from little baby lobsters up to 2 pound lobsters, really big lobsters? And I said, what happens is that they will shed their shell, and they have a soft outer shell, and they go into a cave and hide because they're vulnerable to their predators. So there is a bit of vulnerability, there is a bit of the softness that they could be attacked and be harmed, so they take steps to protect themselves and recognize the fact that they're going through the change, but that growth is required and some feeling of vulnerability is going to happen. So I talked with him again after that, and he said he was talking with his mentor and told his mentor that he was being a lobster right now. So, and she said, oh, really? Then he explained the story. So, like, you live it, do it, and you pass on those stories. But it made a concrete way to say, look, during this future zone, we may feel vulnerable, but we need this. We need to molt the skin so that we can go on to the next stage. In the beginning stage, we're taking a look at what are the new, identifying with the new, relating to it. If you've worked with an organization that has changed the name, and I went through changes, went through mergers, and I know on several instances where I would be in a group and people would say, I'm from this bank or from this organization that doesn't exist anymore. So they still relate to an old organization. So the ID badges are different. The name of the building is different. You relate to the new. You get rid of all of the old icons, etc. And you're building commitment. Trust is building. When you have those incremental successes, you celebrate them like crazy. We also look at the closure of the old and really reinforcing in clarity the purpose, the picture, the plan, and everybody's parts. So in your organ, in your change, what are the behaviors that you're going to look for and positively reinforce? And let me just check in. We've just got a couple minutes left. So how about if we do some brainstorming instead of small group work? What are some behaviors that you're going to look for and reinforce like crazy?
Maybe initiative. People trying, at least trying it, the first person to jump in, and even if it's not perfect, but giving them positive feedback.
Mm-hmm. When they jump in, they show the initiative. When you hear the language from them and they own the change, then reinforce it like crazy. other behaviors that tell you people are committed to the change?
New group structures, where people who didn't necessarily work together before all of a sudden aligning, collaborating.
And
you especially said, where it's required.
And you see people motivated and initiating it themselves too, being proactive about it. Anything else that will give you the sign that the people are committing to the change? They just reinforce it like crazy when you see it. Yes.
More independent. More independent, less, I don't know if the word is complaining. They give up that resistance that they were expressing. Just move on.
And look for kind of like that 4-to-1 ratio. When you see those behaviors, it's kind of like you just clap, you reinforce it. And when you see less dependence on you or the sponsor and more on the ownership, reinforce it.
Less sobbing.
And call it, you know, when, you can also try to extinguish those behaviors. If you don't pay attention to the sobbing, the whining, and the complaining, but you say, well, I really like it, you know, that you've explained this to somebody else or that you've taken on this person as a buddy. So reinforce those, you know, those things that you do see. And a couple strategies for managing the beginning stage. Keep the communication open. Continue to communicate. Acknowledge the emotions, and there may still be some resistance to it, people scooching into it and getting comfortable with it and reinforcing the change. Also, coach people to the new roles because they may have the high motivation, but they may not have the competency as well. So we want to make sure that the people who are in the new roles are coached to that, and you reinforce those incremental improvements in behaviors and adapting to the roles. Look for those quick successes. So anytime you see the, you know, the little lights and the little stops along the way, reinforce those. And then complete the chartering process. And I think it is so helpful to sit down, to talk about it, and to publish somehow what your team charter is so that people are clear on the roles, the plan, the vision, and what we're about. Everything that we're doing is consistent with that vision and what we're expected to accomplish. So the phases are the endings, the neutral zone, and the beginnings. And now, you might have some resistance along the way. I'm going to ask you all a question. What are some of the cues or clues that you know people are being resistant?
Longing for the bad old days.
Oh, we didn't never have to do it when we were this big of an organization and now we've merged. Or, I really liked it when. What are other things? So things that you hear. How about other things that you see?
Maybe. Just simple body language.
Like what? Give us an example.
Like one of these little scowling, crossing of the arms, stiffening, frowning.
Rolling the eyes.
Beads of sweat,
eyes
rolling eyes, disdain or disgust kind of things.
Okay.
It's never nice to see.
Simple, subtle, quiet cues and clues, but watch for them. Yes?
Using the old tool or system, whether it's Salesforce.com, using a paper-based tool versus moving to the new automated tool.
So that unwillingness to let go and sticking with the old tool. All right, how about
sometimes total silence. You know, not asking questions when they should be asking questions about something, just sitting there.
And I generally like to follow a rule of three. So if somebody asks a question, then I answer the question. They ask it again, I answer it again. They answer it three times, it's like, okay, three times there's some kind of resistance going on. So listen to the questions, watch the body language, recognize that there may be subtle kind of things that you might get lip service, but you wouldn't get the action. So all resistance. And here, there's a continuum. And my rule of thumb is that you're going to have 17% of the people are like, yes, let's go, we can't wait to get started. And then you're going to have another 17% of the people who are like, hell no, I won't go. What we're looking for is the critical mass. And if you can get the critical mass to go forward with the change, then that smaller percentage will either self-eliminate, will turn into peer pressure, and will go along with it. So look for the critical mass so that you can effectively implement the change. Then, a couple strategies here. Look for the signs, the subtle cues and clues of resistance. Ask questions. introduce in your communication process a concept, an idea, stop, what questions do you have, and get a pulse. Then more ideas, more expectations, and then stop, what questions do you have. Look for and listen, really use your active listening skills and bring that emotional level down. Acknowledge the feelings that people have, and I understand this is where you are. I know this, you know, I understand that this may be difficult for you, and I'm having some difficulty. I'm working through it myself, and I also know that this is best to help us move forward. So we'll get through this together. Address the resistance. This is what I call the big, ugly, hairy, stinking moose in the middle of the floor. That stinks, and it smells, and people just step over it. And I will have more people get comfortable saying, you know, there's a moose in the room, than saying, I think there's resistance or I think there's conflict. So whatever works for you, use it. But if you have to say there's a moose here and it smells, let's address it in the moment before it gets really, really big and smells really, really bad. Build on that critical mass and adjust your responses to the reaction. If somebody initially who is highly resistant and emotional and anger are angry, then the way you address it as a consultant and also as a leader will be different than somebody who has assimilated and just asking a question. So your response is based upon the emotion, the reaction, and the stage that they're in. So, a couple of things. All right, psychological transitions, be aware of the stages and the phases. The stages of change, shock, anger, rejection, acceptance, and hope, that willingness to move on. Also look at the emotional stages because the change itself is a situation. And then we have that, the toughest part is that emotional part that we go through, the psychological part. And we get a variety of reactions from people. And then facilitate the change. Your role as a change agent is to coach your clients on the change so that they can own it themselves, work through their own responses to it, and develop a plan up front on how to implement the change. And then make sure that you are there as kind of like that trusted confidant to your client group, whether they're internal or external, so that they can get it out and they can best present the changes in the most possible light. So, questions. Questions, comments, takeaways.
It's been a very helpful discussion.
Thank you, Pat. Any other questions? Think about how are you going to use what we talked about in your own work as a change agent?
I think I'll try to get some of that out in the open. I have some people that are resistant. It doesn't matter what change it is. And like I said, we're going through a change right now. So in some respects, I have to agree to disagree because I know I'm not going to change the person's opinion in that respect. And I actually did that a little bit in the presentation I had this week. But instead of glossing over, but trying to address it as best I can. I like the stinky moves. At least you can give people a laugh as they think about it.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's good.
Yeah. And you also, you need to say, look, I understand, what you want. We can't do that. Is there anything else? And then you need to decide if this is, if you can buy into this and if this is where you want to be.
I think that's a good point.
I was just thinking, speaking about being the role model, I think the first thing that I need to do is go back and just check myself and make sure that I'm not resisting any change first. Because if I'm either doing that consciously or unconsciously or modeling resistance in any way, then I'm going to be less effective as a leader for change.
Yeah, behavior continues because it's reinforced. So how do you model it? You lead as a consultant and leaders lead. So, and the team that you're working with, the organization you're working with, is really a microcosm of the leadership in the organization. So, how do you model that and say, I understand where you are, and I also know this is best for the business. So, what kind of cues and clues can you demonstrate that will say I'm acceptance and supportive of this change? Any other thoughts?
Yes. For me, this just provides a really great opportunity to step back. from the things that are, is really kind of in my face right now, and I might be on the front end of enacting change. And I loved what I think Mary or Leslie said about, you know, when management says something, they think it's done because they planned it, they got the timeline, and they put the stamp on it, and then they pushed it off. And that's really just such a huge takeaway to me, because that's not the way it is for anybody outside of the decision makers. So it's just been a really good opportunity for me to take a step back and, you know, remember what the human response is to change, all the way back to the SARA acronym.
And it's all normal.
Yeah.
Honey, you're normal. The other folks?
I think it's so important when you talk about over-communicating with change. And the paradox with that is a lot of times consultants aren't called in until they're ready to implement, you know, and you really have to start communicating from the planning stage, and that's so important.
It is difficult to jump on a moving train. When you do, this is where we are, this is where we need to be. What do we need to do to recover? Because up until now, this is how things work. So what do we need to do? And you can be mindful, very intentional about it. Final thought. What would be the change you want to see in the world? My contact information is on the front part of your handout. So feel free, if you have thoughts or you have comments afterwards, just shoot me an email.
Well, thank you.